Welcome back, ladies and gents. We're doing another long in the making stand-up comedian focus, but this time it's a two-parter. Not a two-parter in the sense that we're doing two split-up episodes, just in that it's a double feature. We got one comedian, then another key comedian, and they're basically two sides of the same coin, just showing how to mix vulgarity with just very brilliant storytelling and also insert some just reasonable acting. So yeah, we are covering both classic comedians, legends. We are covering Richard Pryor, and then we are covering George Carlin. So,
and that's a great description. I really like that.
I try, my dude.
Yeah,
that other voice, you know, besides your host Sully, is none other than Matt Littlefield of the Wicked Awesome Podcast, and he is here to chime in on why these guys illustrate comedy in its perfect evolution.
Yes, and thank you for having me on. I guess, you know, starting with Richard Pryor, I guess I'll talk about my introduction kind of Richard Pryor. I was a child of the 80s. I even graduated in high school in the 80s.
Sweet.
And I knew of Richard Pryor first through movies.
Yeah.
I would say Stir Crazy being the one. And that one, I thought when I was like 10 years old, or actually was I even? Yeah, I guess I would have been about 10 years old. I thought was kind of funny and silly and whatever. Anytime you see guys on a movie screen using a lot of bad language and sexual themes, that's funny to a 10-year-old. That'd be interesting. You know, on my podcast, I do movie reviews on occasion with a childhood friend.
No way. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
And we decide whether or not movies from the 80s stand the test of time. That would be a good one to go back to, actually, Stir Crazy.
It's just wild how much drama he did. Compared to, and same thing with Carlin, who we'll get to in a minute, but for Pryor, I mean, there was a great podcast recently that's sponsored by Turner Classic Movies called The Plot Thickens. It's a different theme, you know, it's kind of like an anthology show. It's a different theme each season, and season one and three were probably the best for me, because season two, I take it back, was probably the most intriguing, because that dealt with the making of Bonfire of the Vanities, but season one was cool because it dealt with Peter Bogdanovich's troubled life, how he, one minute he was happy, the next minute he was miserable, and then the next minute he was just having to make ends meet. But season three, you know, was about Pam Grier, and everyone forgets a big part of her career, personal life, was working with Richard Pryor. He wanted to date with her and be romantic, and she was like, "You're just not serious. You're a mess. You're so high and you're burning down your trailer and you have no sense of just,
right.
You know,
yeah. Just, yeah. Typically those are like red flags right there. If you're high all the time and you burn your trailer down, chances are I don't want to date you, but that's just me. That's just me.
Well, and it's just so eye-opening when we're having to have these conversations on how it is possible to be brilliant as a talent and with an outlook on life and still have troubled vices. But he's really not, I don't want to say he's a tragic figure, although he did, when he passed away in 05, that was mind opening to me, because he'd been just so pertinent, you know, to so many comedians, so many just do it yourself talents. And then I like to say, just seeing him star in, like, again, the movie where he's moving out of his house in critical condition, was just an unusual doctor dramedy. It's just like he just was always picking these unusual formulas. I mean, and I remember seeing Silver Streak young as a kid, and it was so outdated that, and not the funniest, that we just kind of got more distracted with the bloopers and everything, but it was still a very expensive production. And he and Gene Wilder loved working with each other. They spoke the same language.
Yes, they did. And I mean, some movies are better than others. I remember seeing Hear No Evil, See No Evil, and that movie's, that movie's pretty it's pretty forgettable, but it does have some moments where it is funny. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's a mess, but yet at the same time, it's kind of you just can't take your eyes off. It's so hard to explain it to people.
Yeah.
It,
and that's a good description of it. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It may not be good, but everybody saw it at some point. Or
Right. Right. I really wasn't exposed to Richard Pryor as a comedian until later in life. I'd say even my late teens. And that's unfortunate. 1983, 1984, if you were, a 12, 13 year old kid anywhere in this country, you listen to Eddie Murphy's Delirious tape, his, you know, the classic stand-up comedy where, you know, Gus in the backyard barbecue, Goonie Goo Goo Mobile, all that. I mean, everyone, when I say that, most people, everyone in my age group knows what I'm talking about. And I, you know, so it's like you're listening to this tape on your boombox in your bedroom at low, low volume. It's been
hey, stop listening to that filth.
Exactly. Exactly. I was so nervous about my mother hearing that playing in my bedroom. So, and really that has roots in Richard Pryor's stand-up comedy, which someone said, oh, you like Eddie Murphy's stand-up? You got to watch Richard Pryor. And I'm like, oh my God, it's almost like a parallel line. It's like, and Eddie Murphy will admit to that. Richard Pryor was Eddie Murphy's idol. And then I became more familiar with it, with his stand up at least. And Richard Pryor was arrested one time in 1974 for obscenity, for using bad words. A lot of times back in the 70s, local laws were stringent in certain parts of the country.
And, unfortunately,
and you don't see that happening now. But he was.
Yeah, I'll see so many people mouth off, and they just don't realize how lucky they are.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm like, so, do you realize every other country you would likely lose a finger if you said even just one thing?
I know it. I know
taking it, right. Your government. I mean, it's kind of just toxic. And we like to remind each other there was a way where, again, I mean, I'm seeing here, especially with AllMusic, who contrasts him with Dick Gregory and Lenny Bruce. And it's true. Those guys were kind of the ones who opened it up. And they just don't get talked about enough. It's like all these guys are very pertinent, all very key.
Yeah. And you see what Lenny Bruce got arrested a whopping 5 times.
Oh, yeah.
For obscenity. And what he said, I think the worst he said cocksucker at one venue. he said at one time, and he got arrested for it. And I believe that was the worst he said. I don't know what he said in the other ones, but that was the worst thing he said. And it's just like, wow, really? Okay, time sure have changed.
Yeah, but yeah, it sucks that we got to have this conversation. And it's like, there's a big difference between Lenny Bruce. He was just testing out the waters versus being sure. Like a Mel Gibson type who, you know, I'm drunk. I'm like, yeah, sure. But drunk doesn't hide how you're thinking.
Exactly. Shouting out anti-Semitic stuff all over the place. And then when you, with Richard Pryor, when it gets into the cultural aspect of his stand-up, and you said it well, how vulgarity mixes beautifully with story. Because
you see that now. You would see other people go, oh, they're funny as fuck. I'm like, but are you actually listening to what they're saying? You
know? Listen to what he's saying, because in the stand-up of Richard Pryor in the 1970s, especially when he's talking about how policemen interact with African-Americans, it's the same. It's the same. It's kind of eerie to look at that, something that's almost 50 years old and we're still talking.
Absolutely.
About
every stuff. I've seen a bunch of rap music documentaries, and each time Ice-T's been featured, he's almost always hit home on, you're gonna have critics, but you gotta ask yourself, are they listening or were they not liking the sound of it? You know, and right. It's a eye-opener there, because it does make you wonder what sets people off. Is it, again, just how it looks versus how it sounds.
Exactly. Exactly. One thing that he was questioned of often back in the day was his use of the N-word. Mm-hmm. And he was so blatant enough to use it in the titles of some of his albums.
It's like we opened it up for, it's like he's still preaching what, say, an activist like Malcolm X or Martin Luther King is trying to put forward, but he's mm-hmm. also, again, going to be naughty. He's going to just to make a point. He's going to do a Spike Lee, you know, before Spike Lee.
Sure. Thing. Sure. Yeah. It's like, you know, he's going to be naughty. He's going to be provocative, but it gets your attention. You know, unfortunately, you know, he was so entrenched in drug addiction that it really affected a lot of the things he could have done. He had a lot of movie roles lined up that he was supposed to be in that he had to back out of because of his drug addiction. Trading Places was one. I guess he co-wrote
a totally different movie.
Yeah, yeah.
He co-wrote. I can't see him getting along with John Landis, though, given what a character he is. I mean, have you heard of the making of Blue Collar, this crime dark comedy that he did with Harvey Keitel?
No.
Okay,
no.
So long story short, it was one of those movies I saw because I was a big fan of Yaphet Kotto from Alien and The Running Man and Homicide. And it's just solid. It's decent. Not going to offend too many people. It's gritty, but it's fun and it's. It has some fun plot twists, but it was one of those movies where, like, Paul Schrader, you know, that's right, Last Temptation of Christ and Taxi Driver fame, who's done plenty of other acclaimed stuff still to this day, and like William Friedkin, he's old school, politically incorrect, but he was interesting in that, like, he said on the commentary track, he's like, it was a miracle we got this movie made, because he and the other actors hated each other, they had to share scenes, and he's like, hey, you guys can go back to your trailer if you just get this done. Just right here, right now. You don't have to see each other the rest of the day. I'll make sure to do, you know, split screens so you don't have to necessarily be in the same scene. But come on, we got to do it. We got to get it done.
That is so funny. That is so funny. Here's one for you. Pryor co-wrote Blazing Saddles, the Mel Brooks movie, and was set to star alongside Gene Wilder, and then Mel Brooks ended up choosing Cleavon Little for the main role because the production studio would not insure Richard Pryor.
That's unfortunate because it was amazing how they could get someone who was known for being prickly like Marlon Brando at that time, but even at that point, before even the 80s, where they finally, you know, the studios stamped their feet down and said no more. You've got to perform, otherwise you're out of here, kid. And it's just funny how, like you say, they so often all these other comedians would work with Pryor and they'd find a way around. And you're like, well, I guess he can't be in this with us. Nothing against him. He's just
right.
He's got something going on.
Is he going to show up? Is he going to be high when he shows up?
Brooks is still referencing it on the recent History of the World Part 2 show, which I recommend. It's not gonna appeal to everybody, but it's just cool seeing him do throwbacks to his other stuff he's done. Like, there's a shot that's a literally like reference to The Producers, but that's a little off topic. But like, I mean, I totally forgot he was one of the brains behind that script, even though he didn't get to actually feature in it, which is a shame because you can only imagine, you know, he would have gone along pretty well with Gene.
But he was also Pryor was also a writer. I mean, he was an acclaimed writer for Sanford and Son, The Flip Wilson Show, a Lily Tomlin special. And then, of course, just all the movies he was in. You were mentioning some of the dramatic roles he was in. One movie I've never seen, and I will probably go back at some point here and see it, is Jojo Dancer.
Yes.
I
didn't see that.
Yeah. And that was semi-autographical and really got into his upbringing, which was absolutely terrible.
I think I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as a younger person, I was told, oh, it's really depressing. You don't want to see it. So I avoided it. But,
he was doing like serious roles. Like, he makes a key appearance in David Lynch's Lost Highway. And I was always like, what is he doing in here?
What's Richard Pryor doing in that movie? Right, right. And that probably would have been one of his last significant roles.
I think so. And more people are, there's a lot of actors in it, but we're kind of like even The Player or some of those other 90s movies, you're so distracted with the gimmick itself that you do forget after all. Oh, that's right.
That's right. He was in that. Yeah. Yeah. Another good movie. Yeah. The Player is a great movie. Oh, geez. I forgot to mention Superman 3. Richard Pryor was in Superman 3. Yeah.
Someone had
classic,
to do it.
Classic. God, that movie was terrible.
It's dumb. Yeah. And it says a lot when all you can say is like, well, it's not as bad as What Follows. Which is part
four. That is true.
Returns.
That is true.
So it's just like, I was always just like, man, I'm like, I don't know how to feel, but at least he fights himself, but Pryor is literally doing his damnedest. He is like in Back to the Future mode, like being a very funny scientist, Doc McCoy or whatever. And then he's just like kind of disappears. So then you're like, well, I need more of him in this movie because there's not really much else here to follow.
Exactly. So with him now, he's been dead for some time, 18 years or so.
I can't believe it. I still can't.
Yeah. What's his, I mean, in your mind, what's his legacy? I mean, we're talking about just, or I mentioned how a lot of his stand-up is still relevant today. In your mind, what is his legacy?
I think the Sunset Strip special is definitely a big key one that everyone goes to. I loved how CNN had a History of Comedy series, and it was so funny because they're on cable and half the stuff, this actually pretty much brings us in the proper segue for our other part of the topic. They're just making fun of how the seven they showed George Carlin's the seven words you can't say, and you know, at least three sevenths of them you actually can say now on cable. Shit.
Exactly. Still can't say this. Yeah, still can't say the C word. I think
right, one of unless it's a mature audience thing, and you just say it right out the bat, like yep, mature. Like Spike TV and TNT, I'm surprised they let so much stuff play out now. I'm like, whoa, they want those ratings.
Exactly. Yeah, when it comes down to it, it's just words.
It really is. USA Network would literally be often playing some of their shows, like The Sinner and Treadstone. It was weird. It's like they edit them during the day. Like literally all they would do is change the language, the, and maybe blur the nudity, if anything, but you know, the violence is literally still the same. And then, then later after like 9 or 10, they play the uncut version of said episode. I'm like, what are you guys trying to do here? You're not getting any more or less. It's like, they're afraid, even though there's not really as many repercussions as what they had then. It's just, I think they got pistol whipped so many times by the censors, they didn't want to play the game anymore. They were just like, they kind of wanted to be like the movie channels where they're like, just do it, but not to where we have to provide an X-ray. But yeah, no, I mean, like you say, I mean, like the other critics have noticed, he knows how to mix bitterness with anger and illustrate the Black Power movement and decry the oppression of the establishment on the African-American experience. That those are all so well spoken, all these history books and passages about him. But I take it you could say that N-words crazy is also a big one. And then the Live in Concert was, you know, that was a big deal because again, that reminded us that, much like the stand-up specials, you'd see the visual version and then you'd see the CD version. And he is, like you say, just one of those you always want to know more about him. And I'm noticing that other people have cited him, such as Bernie Mac, Chris Rock, and Dave Chappelle is no surprise considering how he brought his lead Pryor's lead writer, Paul Mooney. I'm not going to even touch all the so-called claim about Mooney and Pryor's sons against each other because it's just ugly.
Yeah it is.
And it's a he said, so it's just like, until you guys get over it. And then one of them's like, I'm not going to name who did it. I'm like, well, so how did we even open this conversation?
If you, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube, but I remember years ago, probably in the mid 90s, Barbara Walters did a special just on Richard Pryor because she interviewed him so many times.
Oh, yeah. She wanted to pick everybody's brain. She legit wants to know about you.
Right. And really just, you know, informative. And she just, of course, we all know how Barbara Walters interviewed people. She just went right.
No, no, you don't get out of that easy, Sean Connery. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So in the 70s, you can tell Richard Pryor is visibly high when she's interviewing.
Oh, yeah.
And then especially as time goes,
when he's doing that SNL skit where he's calling Chevy Chase a honky.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Then she interviews him after he set himself on fire after binging crack cocaine, and he lied to her in that interview. He said it was accidental when he did it on purpose, and then... And when he cleaned up before the multiple sclerosis really...
I forgot to mention that. Thank you. He did have MS, guys. He suffered with it. And anyone was comfortable talking about it.
Right. Yeah. So when he cleaned up and was married and with a kid, she interviewed him again. And that was the best I have seen him. Just the most coherent. And I'm sure you can find a compilation of those interviews on YouTube. They are worth watching.
It kept him going. And at the same time, it really messed with him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can only do so much. And I mean, especially back then when, you know, even before Reagan came out, where we were villainizing, you know, people who, you know, try certain things. You can both be mad and kind of understand why people come where they come from. Cause it's like, well, if people are intimidated by me, then and I'm intimidated by them telling me I fucked up and everything, I don't want to be around them either. You know, it's just, it's hard to get help when, but yeah, it's an eye opener. And most people, I think just about everybody typically likes them. I just, if anyone who didn't like them, it was probably just someone who, you know, like we were saying before, just listens to the texture, but doesn't actually look at the devil in the details. You know, they just do the whole,
that's perfectly said.
My grandmother would have not liked this kind of stuff. It would have been too much. I don't know if she would have been okay with Carlin, but it's certainly possible because it seems like different demographics can be that way too.
Well, that might be a good, and that's probably
where I'm going.
Yeah, that's a good segue into Carlin because one thing about Carlin, there's a fairly recent HBO documentary that was put out.
Really?
Yeah, worth watching because one thing about worth seeing. I wish I could remember the title of
George Carlin's American Dream, or is it Bad for You? Okay, yes, I did see part of that. I think. Yeah.
One thing about George Carlin is that his career was very, very long, and he reinvented himself multiple times, starting as a comedy team with Jack Burns, and this is in the black and white TV era, and then, you know, hosting, like, being a guest host of the Tonight Show for many years. Yep. Again, struggling with addiction. You have the 70s where he basically became kind of a counterculture figure.
Yeah.
You know, he went from this suit wearing clean cut comedian guy to like this hippie who is using the seven dirty words all over the place.
Yeah. It was so weird seeing him in all those Kevin Smith movies and even on freaking like cartoon voiceovers, even his Fox sitcom and even freaking Shiny Time Station and Thomas the Tank Engine. So it was just like, whoa, he can do all kinds of things. But, and so for me, he was kind of like one of many people. Like when I would see someone like a Jack Black or Chris Rock or, you know, or even freaking Sarah Silverman, you know, it's like he introduced that kind of whole step for me where I'm like, okay, I'm going to get him, but am I going to get the PG version or the R-rated version today? You know, I don't know. It's going to depend on how many bleeps are out here tonight.
Right. Right. And yeah, you mentioned his TV show. That was actually pretty good. I remember watching that back.
I think they were also in like a TV pilot. I think he did with like Ben Stiller, I think.
Oh, it could very well be. Yeah, I do know the show that he had, the George Carlin show.
Working Trash. That's the one.
That's the one.
It was amazing.
The George Carlin show, which was on Fox for a year, maybe two, that was actually pretty popular. And then there was some dispute that Carlin had with the studio itself, and the show just didn't continue, which was kind of too bad.
I did wonder about that because it seemed like it had decent ratings, but it was one of those, like you say, is just behind the scenes. And
right. It's true, especially when you have strong personalities involved and one person may have a different vision than the other. That's all it takes sometimes. But at least he produced something good and went out on a high note, you could say.
Oh, totally. Compared to other people where it's like, it's not like, I mean, we've been mentioning Eddie Murphy a bunch this time, but it wasn't like that, where it's just like, okay, I mean, we're happy to see him, but he clearly doesn't want to be in this movie. So clearly the rumors about this behind the scenes debacle is true, but same kind of thing where we're looking at a comedian who just like, you can't mess with their formula. They know you're going to goof it up. It almost reminds me of James Burroughs, who had a recent book. He's best known as the director of various sitcoms like, you know, Cheers and Frasier's and Will and Grace. And he's always talk about when doing a sitcom, it is a total giant choreography. You get one move right, wrong, everything is unfunny. I'm pretty sure he was later that same exact way. It's just, okay, it needs a little more gel. It needs a little more spreading it out, you know, in the act. Otherwise, I just don't want to do it. It sucks.
Right, Right. And one thing, George Carlin would stand up because I always was aware of George Carlin as a kid. Right. I listened to Dr. Demento, and on Dr. Demento, they'd play a little bit of his stand up, but they'd bleep out all the naughty words.
So, go to silent, go to commercial break.
Pretty much. It lost its substance.
It's still that way on today's radio. I will listen to college radio, and there will be a moment where it's like, ooh, I think I almost heard something off color. But to be fair, it's the end of the night. So.
And then I remember seeing Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure in the theater.
That was eye-opening too. I was like, he does act.
Rufus. He was awesome. He was awesome.
And
Rufus.
Wasn't that so meta? Can you believe how meta they got? Like, I had the joy of being on Munson's Other Movies, and we were talking Christian Schaal, and we joked how Christian Schaal's character is technically named after George's real-life daughter, Kelly Carlin.
Oh, okay.
Who runs his estate.
Sure.
Now, Who Would Win podcast brought this to my attention. I finally checked them out recently. Apparently, a few years back, they had there was a new comedian on the scene named Ben Glebe. He kind of would start out a little classier, a little PG, and then slowly get a little R-rated. But it was just interesting because his material got retweeted. Like, both Nikki Glaser and Kelly Carlin retweeted him saying, "We found the next George." And I was like, that is wild. Like, to sign off on that and say that, and that's cool. Because they're not saying we're better than him. We're just saying we're trying to carry on his same kind of brilliant satire.
Right. I will say this. My real appreciation of George Carlin came in the 1990s, and I'll tell you why. I don't know how old you are. Something tells me you're younger than I. You're in your 30s. Okay. Yes. So you're quite a bit younger than I. You're by quite a bit. And I grew up, I started college in a time of really crappy comedy. I mean, horrible comedy. There was stand-up comedy everywhere. You turned on cable television, whether it be A&E, MTV had a comedy hour. You know, every cable station had a comedy hour. Rock radio stations had a comedy breaks. And there was so much of it out there that you really had to weed through it to get to what was good. And it was terrible. I mean, most of it was just terrible. But I remember.
Which seeing, one was it again? Sorry, I missed the name.
I remember in the 1990s that I heard George Carlin's stand up on the radio one day on one of these rock radio stations locally in Bangor, Maine. And I listened and I'm like, oh my God, this is good. He's talking about a little bit of social political commentary here, and he's funny. He's really funny, which made me watch his HBO specials, which you can still watch now, and they're still funny.
What's even weirder is I noticed that when he passed away, I think it was 04, 06. It was like before prior, I think. Let me check. But it was weird. Like, they didn't, I think because he owned his stand-up specials, like, they just had distribution rights or home media rights. They didn't really do any tribute to him, which I thought was weird, because usually they were all about that, you know, all the guys who made up our content. But he too is cited as going along with the same, you know, he was working with other comedians like Jack Burns, the radio persona in Shreveport, and then, but like Carl, like prior, he was equated to Lenny Bruce, doing the whole talking about why you can't say that and why, you know, that difference between being an asshole, a jerk, and even in my way, when he would do stuff like that, it made sense to me. Is like, okay, so being a jerk or asshole is okay, just don't be a douchebag. It's just so eye-opening, just learning about just putting up with people, being the bigger man.
Yeah. He died in 2008 after a long history of heart failure. Again, he had a long, long battle with cocaine. And
just like prior, you know, he was not clean. But what was really crazy is I had zero idea about this. Apparently, in 2016, they had his first album that had come out after his passing, that basically had a lot of material recorded at a live at the MGM Grand in Vegas back in literally a day before 9/11 in 2001. And mm-hmm. they had to shelve it because, again, the name of it is I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die. So it was just one of those. They could not release that. It's just like,
could you imagine? Oh, man.
Jeez. I'm just glad he won the Mark Twain Prize Award in 08. I remember watching that special and just about everybody showed up. Tina Fey, Eddie Murphy. And it's like, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And he does get a lot of he gets appreciation from Andy the comedians, Kaufman,
Steve Martin, oh, yeah. Robin Williams.
Yeah, all of them.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. You name it. Even more modern ones like your Bill Burr, as you mentioned, Tina Fey.
Yes. Well. Bill Burr is a good contrast. He's kind of the closest, I guess you could say, we have today. I haven't seen as much of his material. I've mainly seen a lot of his talk show appearances. Yeah, that's true. Like the 1972 album FM and AM kind of was as safe as they probably could be at that time.
And it does make me wonder, when I first started communicating with you about doing a show,
I mentioned
Bill Hicks,
yeah,
who was a great comedian in the 80s and 90s.
Died, from.
Yeah, died way, way too young.
Too young?
Yeah.
So young to where it was just like, really? Yeah. And
exactly.
Yeah. I'm sure you know how, kind of like The Matrix and Fight Club, a lot of radical trolls online have started taking those plot twist movies out of sequence, and Bill Hicks is kind of next up. Like, people are taking that and all this other stuff like out of context where you're like, why?
Yeah, exactly. But I do wonder, because Bill Hicks and George Carlin, you know, you really wouldn't call them left-wing comedians because they were all over the place with their beliefs. They were fearless.
They were just kind of anti-government, like just in terms of doing the wrong thing, not in,
right,
I want them out of my life, or I think they're all fuck-ups. It was just more, like you say, just kind of like Spike Lee. Just say a loaded statement and then backtrack on it and then let you in on the joke. You know, like I would even equate it to possibly even Norman Lear, like when he has stuff on the Jeffersons or Archie Bunker, or even a mm-hmm. similar show like Married with Children or Boston Legal. You know, you can say I like that show or I don't like some of those shows, but everybody pretty much knows they're in on the joke, except the ones who are just dipshits who agree with the bigoted commentary and are like, I want to be like Archie, and like, no. not the joke, guys.
It's interesting because you mentioned Archie Bunker. It happened to just fall upon on YouTube basically a 20-minute segment of Archie Bunker's racist rants.
Oh my god.
They would not fly on television today. They just would not.
Have they modified a few episodes? Not to get too off topic.
They probably have, but this is, you know, these were, you know, clips from the original shows. And it's just, I mean, the thing is, Archie Bunker was viewed as someone who was funny because he was so ignorant on so many issues. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you could use that type of humor now.
Blackish is as close as we came, but that was a more fun kind of version of Cosby Show minus, you know, Cosby. But yeah, no, that's true. Right. I think the closest you can get is just you have to make it in a mockumentary kind of way, kind of like again, The Office, or even though they're sure. saying nowadays there's plenty of idiots who want to take that out of sequence, but they're proving it wrong again. I mean, Abbott Elementary has been a surprise hit, and mm-hmm. they're making fun mm-hmm. of all kinds of things, and yet they somehow are able to make it PG level, even though they're implying, yeah, all kinds of things, racism, vulgarity, even adultery.
Sure. Well, it gets to the heart of our culture and, you know, parts of our culture that do exist. And
we can't deny it, unfortunately. It's there. We got to address it.
You can't. And it's like, we have to address it, and we're going to bring humor to it while we address it. Or,
yeah.
That's
might as well, instead of getting annoyed by, whoa, where did that come from?
Right.
It's kind of like when we had the wake up call with our recent political commentary, we had to realize, well, okay, I mean, these people have unfortunately always been here. It's just now shame on us for finally paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah.
It's kind of like when you would see a redneck stereotype at a bar or a heckler at a live stand-up show or local music venue. It was just like, well, they're always here being a douche. It's just, you got to either put your foot down and say, you're not allowed back in here again. You know, we don't want your business. Mm-hmm. Or you got to say, well, I guess it's time to leave. You know, either way you can win. You don't have to be a part of it, but it is, I get that it's hard because it's just annoying because you never know you're going to encounter it until it's hit you right square in the face. So yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I'll mention George Carlin and Bill Hicks in the same breath again, just during the last presidential election.
Oh, yes.
And during the pandemic, I thought more than once, if George Carlin and Bill Hicks were around today, what would they have to say about all of this?
How'd we get here? They probably would quiz us like the teachers they were and say, were you not paying attention?
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Were you not paying
attention? Do I have to be alive for society to be sane? Because that's the other thing, too. He would like tell all kinds of people is like, I mean, I think it's that 199 concert he did, which is such a hoot still, where he opens it all up with, like, I think that was the first one I saw. I knew it was way later in the game, but I just was starting with something, and it was so funny. He's like, how are you doing? Everyone's like, I'm fine. And he's like, well, fuck you. What a way to get everyone into the whole thing. Just exactly. Perfect type of shock value versus, you know, nowadays I see other people is like, I mean, I've seen other people who I found out the hard way. Ooh, this is just very on balance. I have nothing wrong with the person, but their stand-up needs some serious organization. And there were some who I would see be hysterical doing stand-up on like Conan or Jay Leno. And then I'd see them a follow-up and I was like, X-rated to the point where it's not really contributing anything. Like, it's just rude for the sake of being rude.
Exactly. Yeah. And I look at there's Carlin on campus in 1984, 1986, Playing With Your Head. Those two are good. Albums from the 80s, if anyone wanted to go back, still funny today. And then I would say all 14 of his HBO specials are worth watching. All 14 of them. Yeah.
So just like you can see Pryor's like first three big stand-ups, you can definitely see most of any of his material and you'll be pretty entertained.
Yeah, pretty much. If you go way, way back and the 1963 Burns and Carlin at the Playboy Club Tonight, parts of it are okay. It's really, you would almost think it was a different comedian.
Warming up.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, if you want to take kind of a historic approach and just see the or discover the progression of where his comedy went, it's all worth listening to, I would say.
Yep.
Definitely.
It does make you wonder, like, who's taking proper note versus who's actually trying to be just as skilled as his material.
Right. And then it's you just have to admire, you know, it's not, he's the one that is writing the material, which is genius. And he also delivers it in just the best possible way. I mean, both are an art form. I mean, Bob Hope never wrote his own material.
No.
But he knew how to.
And he wasn't a nice person either. But yeah, that's the end of the
exactly.
story. But it is an eye opener on learning, like, who is so grateful. And I think, you know, I'd always heard it before, but it was so easy to think, whoa, you know, when they weren't giving proper credit to their contributors. But I mean, I think we've slowly just, even people who never thought about it, slowly learned it, but it was just easier to do with like political administrations, directors, crews, and even music artists is like, who's producing your material versus being part of the act as well. I think it just was easier to put two and two together if you were actually, you know, working closely and seeing all the key players on stage together, as opposed to you show up to, you know, wrap this up.
Sure, sure. Yeah, exactly. Because there's a lot of people behind the scenes with many, many productions, whether it be music, TV, movies, whatever. I mean, I do movie reviews. You do movie reviews.
Oh, yeah.
It's often I forget to mention the people behind the scenes, whether it be whoever did music, set design, whatever. I fail to mention that too often, and it's all part it's all part of a big package. I mean, it right. works because the package works. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Good. So George Carlin, his legacy, what would it be to you? Or,
you know, I'm with you. Like, it's very key, but it's so hard. Like, I feel some people say Pryor is better and other people say he's better. I feel I can't live with either one. I think they're like you say, their material is still funny today. It's just a matter, I guess, of just seeing who's actually gonna, again, you know, like use their material more. But it's eye-opening because we have to also realize that they initiated the whole comedy segment of having an actual conversation about life instead of, I'm going to just, like, for instance, one person who I do find very funny. I don't know if you've heard of him, Anthony Jeselnik.
Oh, he's in Riot. I love that guy.
Right. Yeah, I have very little issues with his work. He's pretty good at it. He's pretty on the money, but sometimes he will mention certain material where I'm like, I don't know. I don't think this is the right crowd for that. You know, like talking about stuff like abortions, where he's like, okay, I mean, you can joke, but I don't know if it'll go down well.
Yeah, it seems. And again, the art of the delivery, he's like delivering stuff that is cringeworthy, but yet you laugh at it. It's
you
like,
really do.
Damn it. Why am I laughing at that? That is really funny. Maybe I shouldn't be, but it's funny. Yeah. No. So I guess what I think with both Pryor and Carlin, any of the comedians of today, actually any of the comedians in the last 40 years, you can't mention without mentioning the influence of Pryor and Carlin before them. Mm-hmm. Because to me, there's no stand-up comedian without those two gentlemen. There isn't.
Right?
There isn't. So
especially, I mean, Hicks and Larry. It's like, yeah, why would you think you exist?
completely. So I mean, one thing I didn't research, I wonder how Pryor and Carlin got along with each other. Were they friends?
I'm looking it up now. Good idea.
Yeah, I should. Yeah. Yeah. I think they were. I mean, I don't know if they were close, I think they had an appreciation.
There was a hysterical epic rap battles in history episode. I know Carlin on Richard Pryor. He says, as it stands right now, I lead Richard Pryor in heart attacks 2-1. However, he still leads me 1-0 in burning yourself up. Blam. Wow. That's tense.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Because they both had similar problems, but yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's good.
And I know in 2012, both Richard Pryor's daughter and Kelly Carlin both hosted a comedy stand-up show and did their own solo comedy acts. So, yeah,
oh, okay,
I think they embraced it. I think.
Yeah. It seems like they did. Good, good. Well, it's really good talking to you. I mean,
anytime. I know they were on a talk show together one time.
Mm-hmm.
At Kraft mm-hmm. Summer Music Hall Variety Show, I think.
Okay, yeah.
For Flip Wilson's TV program. But yeah, like you say, it is one of those where it's just like, it's just such an eye-opener. Just seeing the kind of underappreciated comedy that no one really seems to want to talk about nowadays, where you're just like, well, but this is before we decided, hey, you know, we want to just see how edgy we can be without being clever, you know.
Yeah there's one thing about getting up on stage and just using vulgarity to get a rise out of the crowd.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen a lot of
at least just to get attention, and then lead into it, right. Say, just kidding, you know, something instead of, whoa, where are we going?
Well, but I think it's just with the social commentary added in with it. It's just like, okay, the vulgarity's here. Yes, you have my attention, but
it's not funny.
Now you have to listen. Now you got to listen to what
I
got to
listen, you know, something right. To just remind us to be dialed in. Cause there are, like you say, times where you're like, I'm not really sure where we're going with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've successfully divided your audience now.
Right. You'll have someone like Jerry Seinfeld who never used vulgarity because he felt like it was just always a cheap kind of stunt. I find some of Jerry Seinfeld's stand up fine. Right. Where I appreciate Jerry Seinfeld the most was through his television sitcom.
Right. So, it seems like out the side of there, he's ruptured a few feathers.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Especially because he's about the whole it's comedy, you know, doesn't believe in apologizing. And it's like, well, this is an interesting discussion to have. I think we could layer it better.
Exactly. Yeah. Good.
No one's perfect, but like you say,
nobody is perfect. Yeah. And I admire the art form that all those guys participate in and have done over the years. And you take bits and pieces here or there, you appreciate some, you don't appreciate other stuff. And then
Howard Stern has said there's plenty of stuff he wouldn't do today.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, people grow and they mature, you know, and Howard Stern has turned into a very good interviewer.
Yeah. That's the irony. And just, it was just so cool seeing them when a celebrity they like who has influenced them, man, they get even more electric. Like you should totally see the recent Conan O'Brien interview he did. Conan's like, why am I on your show? And it's like, Howard's like, cause you inspire me. I'm like, how do I inspire you? But I mean, Barbara Walters just passed away and it was so electric seeing Robin Quivers light up. She's like, she's literally everything that made me want to start interviewing people and do comedy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so it's just so cool to get that kind of just people don't forget what made them get into the industry as opposed to others who were like, oh, I thought of it first. I'm like, sure, you did. Don't we all?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. This has been a delight having you on here. Anything you would like to promote on Wicked Awesome?
No, I just, you can find me on Spotify, Apple, SpokeSignal, Google Com, I don't know, wherever the hell you can find podcasts, you can find me. Just simply the Wicked Awesome Podcast. And my show, we do movie reviews. I talk about being single in my 50s. Divorced, single in my 50s.
Congrats.
Thanks. I do a lot of music reviews as well. And, you know, occasional just pop-up guests type things. And we talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about. So that's my show.
Sounds about right.
And actually, what you heard here is quite a bit about what my show is about. It's a lot of discussion around random topics and... Mm-hmm. And it's always fun. Yep.
Anytime, my dude. And you're on all the platforms, including Spotify, Anchor.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. You can find me Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Those are the two popular ones. My platform is Podbean, so I get a lot of listeners out of Podbean too. Yeah. Good. All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you. All right. Anything else we need to know?
Not much. I got to work tomorrow and be a normal person. That's about it.
Yeah. But it's been a delight, sir. And you're welcome back anytime.
Excellent. Yeah.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.